We spent 30 minutes yesterday discussing what changes the Springboks might make to their team for Saturday's Rugby World Cup semi-final against England in Paris, and it turns out they have made none. Rassie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber backing the exact same 23 players that did the business against France in the quarterfinals a week ago. Welcome back to the Inside Pass. My name is Lloyd Bernard. Joining me in the Cape Town studios once again, Herman Mostert. Mostert, what do we know?
Probably nothing. I don't think anyone knows what Razzie and Jacques' next steps are going to be. They just seem to be a step ahead of everyone else. But I guess if you're a Springbok fan, it's probably a good thing because, I think they're playing mind games with everyone.
No, we mustn't be too harsh on ourselves. I think if we go back and listen to yesterday, you know, we did agree in the pack that at least the bulk of that pack was going to be the same. We said potentially a change in the front row, just one of those interchangeable moves where the loose heads and tight heads, you know, could very easily start and swap. You know, if you think of Kitsoff and Oxenchair in particular, you could very easily have been Oxenchair in the starting lineup instead of Kitsoff. But we predicted the rest of the pack to be the same. And then, you know, we thought perhaps a change at scrum half, where we thought maybe a Faf de Klerk kind of more traditional approach might be better suited to England than Kobus Reinach. And then Rassie also in the week, you know, with some of the things he said in the media, pointing towards Lucanio and thinking, geez, he's been training well, he could come back in, you know, putting Kane and Moody up for media in the week, suggesting he could get a game. So it just seemed, listening to Rassie, that there were a few other options. Andre Pollard as well, obviously, was one, and wondering whether he would come straight back into number 10, given the enormity of the occasion. But, you know, sticking to his guns and backing the same players, which I suppose in some way is really nice to see, because how can you leave anyone out who played such a great game against France?
Yeah, look, I mean, I said yesterday I wasn't sure if they knew that what their best team actually is to pick, their best 23, because there's so much depth in that squad and so many options available. And they haven't, you know, consistently picked the same teams back to back. Incidentally, in the press release that SA Rugby sent out this morning, that this is only the second time in the tenure of Rassie and Jacques Nienaber since 2018, when they got on board together, that the Boks have picked back to back the same back to back 23-man squads. The other occasion was against New Zealand at the 2019 World Cup, and we actually lost that game in the pool stage, as you'll recall. So that says something, I guess. You know, that it was one of the famous Springbok wins last Sunday. I think it's very tough to drop anyone. Like we were speaking yesterday, obviously Rassie had spoken about Lucanio being back, and he'd mentioned him. He'd mentioned Kane and Moody. I mean, they'd put Moody up for media. That's the first time they've ever put someone up for media and not picked the guy in the 23-man squad.
Yeah,
it just shows you. I think they're playing mind games with England. Maybe Rassie's again followed England on Twitter as well and unfollowed everyone else. But I think it's a good thing in that regard. You know, we were speaking about how can you drop a guy like Jesse Krul that's played probably the best rugby match of his life last Sunday, and then you want to drop him for Lucanio Amu, who has not played rugby at all in the last 4 months. I think probably a good decision, to stick with what went right, you know, because France are a much better team than England, and we managed to beat France with this team. So you would expect that they obviously are the favourites. They shouldn't underestimate England. I think it's a good, not a bad call.
Yeah, Bongi Mbonambi was the official man of the match. We were chatting yesterday in the office last weekend.
Debating that.
And I mean, just against France, rather. And just to, you know, highlight how well the Boks played. I mean, we named guys like Creel, Dwayne Vermeulen, Damien Dialendi, Ibn Etzebeth, who could have, you could argue that, you know, we're probably more deserving of that, you know, Cheslin Kolbe.
I mean, even Kwakha Smith came on.
Yeah, very difference. Easily could have been named out of the match. So it really was the complete kind of squad effort from the Boks against France. And as you said, that was a famous victory. If you don't know, and if you just need to be reminded of what that team is, the same 23 this weekend as we saw last weekend in the quarters. So the Springbok 23 for England on Saturday, Damien Willems at 15, Kirtley Orrens at 14, Jesse Creel 13, Damon Dialendi 12, Cheslin Kolbe 11, Marnie Lubbock 10, Kobus Reinach 9, Dwayne Vermeulen 8, Peter Stefter Toy 7, Sia Khaleesi 6, Captain Franco Mostert 5, Eben Etzebeth 4, Francois Haber 3, Bongi Mbonambi 2, and Stephen Kitsoff 1. Your bench, Dion Ferry, Oxenchair, Vincent Koch, Erkias Neyman, Kwaka Smith, Faf de Klerk, Andre Pollard, and that man, Willy LaRue, who I'm sure will have once again divided opinion with his selection. We want to go over to Simkiwe Abaniso, who will join us from our Joburg studio. Sim was tasked this morning with writing a very good first take to the box squad that came out, you know, very quickly after the squad was announced. Sim, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you. I can hear you fine. Thank you so much for making the time. Good job on the first take. Those are always tough to do.
Thanks. There wasn't much to do. They named exactly the same team as last week. So you just, I'd like to say I was going to sort of copy and paste, but obviously you couldn't simply because last week, it was such a different path for them to take, given the context of all the other squads they'd named for all their other matches. But I must say, again, I am mildly surprised that they've named exactly the same team. I kind of worry about the small things like sort of fatigue from a game like that, lack of recovery, and maybe, you know, it's just asking if a team like England doesn't warrant the 6-2 split on the bench just to put them away, you know?
Yeah, no, certainly a little bit surprising. And I was wondering about fatigue a little bit as well. And I was actually going to throw it to Haman a bit later. But I mean, 6-day turnaround, is that enough time? I mean, you know, how concerned should we be, really, guys? I mean, about, you know, that kind of turn. You know, Jesse Creel had stitches in his head. I mean, Eben Etzebeth played, you know, he came straight out of a scene of Gladiator by the end there. You know, he was, he couldn't have felt great on Monday morning. How concerned should we be about that? I mean, are we right to be a bit worried?
Look, I mean, England. Sorry, Sim.
Sorry, Michael. Sorry, carry on.
No, it's fine. That is your question.
Oh, okay. So my thinking is, yes, there should be mild concern simply because, geez, it took a lot. That game was sort of quite relentless in terms of its pace, its intensity, its physicality, literally from the first minute to the very, 84th minute or whatever it finished at. Yeah. And so as a result, you kind of understand that, the guys took a pounding, and you've already listed, the several scenes that came from it in terms of just how tired the guys looked. You know, we could still throw in the mild debate about the HIA, sort of like maybe guys needed that, that 12-minute breather or whatever. You know, you could throw all those things in. But
stop it.
I think the one thing they have in their favor, the box, is all the rotation that we were complaining about sort of earlier in the season. You know, we kept saying, oh, geez, they just haven't named the same team again. This is literally the first time this whole year that they've named the same team twice.
Yeah.
And so I think as a result, just in terms of minutes, maybe in terms of bumps and bruises and how guys feel, how battle weary guys feel, there might be a need for concern. But I actually think maybe in terms of just how many minutes those guys have in them this year, maybe it's not so much for them to sort of get themselves up to that semi-final again.
Mm.
Sim, if I can just come in here, looking ahead to the England Challenge, if you'll recall 4 years ago, the box went into that final heavy underdogs after England had convincingly beaten the All Blacks in the semis. This time around, the tables are turned. You know, I see at the bookies, the box are firm favourites to win against the English this time around. Are you a little bit worried about the fact that everyone is sort of expecting the Springboks to win? Maybe they could be caught a bit off guard, maybe being a bit overconfident. What's your view on that? Or do you think they've got it handled?
I'd say probably yes and no. The yes part is we are traditionally a team that does well with its back to the wall. You know, we kind of like come into our own if we're playing against the host, if we're playing against a number one ranked team, if, you know, if there's some obstacle or other in the way. So we come into our own then. And then usually in the past, we haven't quite known how to handle sort of being expected to win. Almost like we're a team that plays to prove people wrong as opposed to prove ourselves right. So I must say, if there's one thing I've noted with this current Bok team, it is that that sort of cloak of it's almost like a loser's mentality has fallen off. If it isn't falling off, I'll refer you back to say a game like you know, we had must win games against Argentina in the rugby championship. You know, Argentina had sort of like, you know, beaten Australia and Australia, and kind of like the thinking was, oh, because we'd lost to the All Blacks, maybe we should be careful because, you know, we might not win this. And it was the away game in particular that I'm talking about. Mm. You know, there they just turned up and they just ran all over the, you know, the Argentinians, and they were expected to win that game, even though, you know, there were one or two people thinking, well, maybe it might not quite be, you know, the case. So that's the yes part in terms of, but like the no part is just like, I don't think the Bok themselves suffer from sort of taking the opposition lightly like we are likely to. I mean, I think a lot of the talk that you're talking about is ours and not theirs. I think they pretty, you know, if ever there was a team that knows for a fact what it's like to go into a must-win fixture like that as the underdogs and actually have come out on top, it's the Bok themselves from 4 years ago. So yes. I think it would really take an incredible level of complacency on their part to not remember, you know, something as recent as 4 years ago.
Really interesting stat from this team selection. It's the most experienced Bok side ever for one of the biggest Bok tests ever, you know, in the context of Rugby World Cup games. And, you know, when you think about Rassie and Jacques and how meticulous they are with their minutes that they put into players and their planning, you know, you could be forgiven for not thinking that this is a coincidence, you know, to have your most experienced team playing in a game like this. 895 test caps in the squad, four more than the 891 against Samoa in Birmingham in 2015. And if you go through that starting lineup, you know, there's guys who have just accumulated like a batting innings, you know, caps over the years through being in the system for extended periods under Rassie and Jacques. Bongi and Bonambi now on 66 caps. Frans Malherbe on 67 caps. Steven Kitsoff on 81. You know, Franco Mostert's quietly gone about notching up 71 caps. You know, Peter Steptoe, obviously a stalwart, 74. And even in the back line, Jesse Creel has 66 test caps now. And, you know, Sim, how important do you think that experience has been to Rassie and Jacques in planning for this moment of the World Cup? I mean, do you think there's a chance that this stat at this time is not a coincidence?
In all likelihood, it probably isn't. These guys, I mean, I know that we sort of make fun of about the team announcement, about how sort of what a wild ride they tend to be in terms of you have no idea what's coming. But the thing is, they themselves internally are not, you know, obviously the most random guys. Everything is kind of calculated and stipulated to within, you know, an inch of its life, as it were. Somebody was explaining to me that, you know, how Rassie and Jacques works. And he was basically saying, you know, if Rassie has an idea about what a team does, Jacques invariably has basically like 20 videos, pieces of footage to back up what they're saying. So there's that kind of level of making sure that they're paying attention to detail. And so it's not random, I don't think. But the really impressive thing for me is the fact that when you start talking about teams with that many caps, usually they've got quite a stale feel to them in terms of, Jesus, it's an old day. You know, if you go back to the team against Samoa in Birmingham that you're talking about, if you think back, we were kind of thinking, oh, it's a bit of an old team. I think they had, a 37, 38-year-old Matt Field and so on and so on and so on. So they're thinking, oh, it's a bit of an old team, man. But like, you look at this team, what they've, the masterstroke is that it doesn't feel like that at all. And the reason for that is the planning in terms of obviously keeping these guys going and looking after their minutes. And then over and above that, you know, the guys that have come in, when you look at, you know, the guys that have come in, when you look at Miami, say Kirtley Orange, you know, the new guys that have come in just to freshen up the side. So it's, that's probably the most impressive thing these guys have done. And I guess at some weird level, I don't know, I've asked them about this, but they disagree. I, at some level, if you look at the fact that we missed the year 2020 due to COVID and our guys didn't play, I think that might have contributed to them being a bit fresher than most teams their sort of cap age would be.
Sim, regarding the styles of play, I think it's probably fair to say that England and South Africa probably match up a little bit more than what France and the Springboks matched up. Obviously, the French came at the Springboks with a ferocious intensity. They played the game at a very high pace. Do you expect things to be a bit calmer on Saturday? You know, a bit of a more attritional, slower type of a game? Or do you think there could be a few surprises, maybe from both sides? Maybe with the Springboks sticking with Marnie Lubbock at fly half and Kubus Reinach at scrum half, maybe they're sort of, you know, showing their attacking intent, or you are expecting a typical Rugby World Cup semi-final attritional encounter?
Look, given the styles, it should be quite attritional, because, you know, they very much like a South African team. You know, big pack, kicking fly-off, aggressive defense. They like to play in the right areas of the field. But, you know, if you want to talk about which team sort of has had the sort of the higher intensity, I think, you know, obviously if you look at the box, you know, they've played against the Scottish side, they've played against an Irish side, and they've played against a French side. Those are all teams that prize sort of tempo and intensity almost above everything else to get to the opposition. So if a team is used to sort of an up-tempo and intense game, it would have to be the box. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think you look at the two teams, you say, well, they're quite similar in approach, but maybe the box obviously have the better players, even though the, you know, that their approach is similar. And when I say better players, I mean mostly obviously in the forwards. And as a result, maybe, you know, that's not really going to count, simply because you expect the box forwards to be superior to England forwards, and therefore, you know, that's kind of where the game's going to be won anyway. But the box obviously also have added that extra sort of string to their bow, which is, you know, having you know, someone like Miney direct traffic at 10, where you can play a game, you know, where you can actually strike from, you know, as little as 2 to 3 phases, or you can actually catch a team sort of napping in transition. So I think the box kind of have, you know, game sort of model wise, they've probably got a game that covers what England can offer. But I have to remind all of us that, you know, if you want to talk about intensity and tempo, they have our old conditioning coach,
Alan Walters.
So maybe we need to be careful about, you know, whether they can, you know, they can handle tempo or not, because we remember one of the famous things about the 2019 final was that sort of 30 odd phases, that, you know, what was it called? What did Jacques christen it? That period where we basically shut them out from scoring. Superior discontent, I think the word was. And, you know, you have to remember that. And when you remember that, it was entirely just about fitness and the willingness to get up from the floor. And at the time, Alec Walters was a conditioning guy. So I don't think they'll be found wanting conditioning-wise. So that should make it interesting.
Yeah, Alan Walters got a lot of praise, and after the 2019 World Cup, and yeah, doesn't sit well having him in the opposition camp. Sim, I've got one more for you. I mean, it's safe to say, and as your first take pointed towards, you know, it did take us off guard a little bit. I think most people will have expected a tweak or two to the match day 23. What were the expected changes for you? I mean, if you had to look at the France game and that match day 23, I mean, what would you have expected to see a bit different in the squad?
I must say, looking at the team, it feels like Russia and Jacques Nina sort of spent more time thinking about the English, you know, lineup they might play than thinking about their own team, you know. I kind of would have expected a 6-2 split on the bench, simply because I think you know, England still have kind of like forward power, and I thought maybe 6-2 split to try and put the game to bed as quickly as you possibly can, and then you can kind of like cruise in the second half instead of kind of like still be trying to plug leaks. I would have expected a 6-2 split, but and then based on the chats, maybe one or two of the warriors from the French game, and I'm thinking Jesse Creole to be rested, yeah, simply because they were talking with Kane and Moody and Lucania Arm so much. Yeah. You know, Lucania obviously due to his training, apparently looking really good in training, and then Kanan sort of having done absolutely nothing wrong to warrant him not being in the 23. So I would have expected that kind of setup, but obviously what they seem to have decided is that they need both, you know, they need the insurance of 100 Pollard to come off the bench, 100 Pollard in particular to come off the bench. And the real issue with that is you then probably can't field a 6-2 6-2 split on the bench. And also, maybe, you know, the thinking may well have been, well, if a 5-3 split, you know, stood up to a French 6-2 split last weekend, you know, why would it take a team that is, with respect to England, inferior to France? You know, why would it be so difficult to be able to do the same thing against a team that's inferior to France, you know, with the 5-3 split? I think that's what ended up being the thinking.
Yeah. Sim Abadisa from our Joburg studios, thank you so much for joining us. Mostert, I suppose the two concerns for me looking at this, one, heavy legs, you know, the 6-day turnaround from the quarterfinal, and then two, that World Cup cliche of asking if you've already played your final. You know, we saw that with England, you know, knocking over the All Blacks in 2019 in what was just a superb knockout game of rugby, and they really just peaked and then fell flat in the final against the Box. Are those two concerns that you share? I mean, the more we talk about it and conditioning and the 6-day turnaround and just how much that France game took out of the players, I mean, heavy legs and empty tanks, is that a concern?
Not as big a concern, but remember that England also played on Sunday in their quarterfinal, and they played against Fiji. Now, Fijians may not be as good as the French, but they're certainly as physical as the French can be. You know, and that was a very physical game for England. It looked like they were going to win comfortably, and then after leading 24-10, Fiji came back to make it 24-24. So England had to dig really deep at the end of that game to win it.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not. You could have, if England had played on Friday or on Saturday, maybe there would have been 1 or 2 days difference. That does make a difference in your recovery. Then it could have been an issue. So I'm not going to be too worried about that. And concerning the fact that have we played our final, we could argue the All Blacks have played their final against Ireland as well. So, true. So look, I think it obviously there is a case for saying something like that because it has happened in the past. But I think this has been an extraordinary World Cup in the sense that we've had two very, very good quarterfinals, you know, New Zealand, Ireland, and South Africa, France, which could have been finals, not let alone semifinals. Yeah. And I don't think we're going to see that again in future because obviously they're going to change the structure of when they're going to announce the draw. They're going to do it a bit later, so you're not going to get that scenario where these teams would be ranked differently heading into a World Cup where the top five would almost be on the same side of the draw. So this is probably an extraordinary scenario.
Yeah.
And so I think I said beforehand, if the Springboks get through that quarterfinal, because they were always going to either play New Zealand or France, and it was going to be a tough match either way. And I always said beforehand, if they're going to get through that through that match, they'll get to the final. I'm going to stick by that.
Yeah. No, we're still very much on for our dream Rugby World Cup final, which would just be superb if it was the Springboks and New Zealand meeting in the final of this World Cup. As great as it would be for Argentina, what a story that would be if they could find a way, into that game. I mean, Argentina in the first...
No, it would be an easy win for the Boks in the final.
It would be incredible. But the big news from today is that the Boks have named an unchanged match day 23 for their Rugby World Cup semi-final against England on Saturday at 9 o'clock. We will be bringing you all of the build-up from now until then, including action-packed match day coverage of what happens there. Stay tuned to News 24 for all of that news coming out of France. This has been the Inside Pass. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. We'll chat again tomorrow. Cheers.